welcome to our Biz Huddle podcast. I'm your host, Mitch Cuthbert, Creative Director at Baker Creative.
If you haven't already subscribed to the channel, please hit subscribe so you can get notified when new content comes out. Please share this with anyone who could be inspired by it.
Most Reverend Earl Fernandez was ordained and installed as the 13th Bishop of the Diocese of Columbus, serving 23 counties and more than 278,000 members. Born in Toledo, Ohio, he was the first Indian American bishop to serve the diocese. He was previously a pastor of St. Ignatius of Loyola Church in Cincinnati and a staff member of the Apostolic Nunciature in Washington, D.C., and dean of the Athenaeum of Ohio, Mount St. Mary's Seminary of the West in Cincinnati. Bishop Fernandez received a doctorate in moral theology from the Alphonsian Academy in Rome. Welcome, Bishop Fernandez.
Welcome, Bishop. I'm so excited that you decided to join us for the podcast. Thank you so much for your time.
No, thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
So let's start kind of from the beginning. I mean, it was my understanding you were a physician. And can you kind of tell us briefly what that journey has been to where you are?
Yeah, so I didn't actually finish my medical school, but my father was a physician. Three of my four brothers are physicians. I, in fact, did my pre-med. I was an undergraduate pre-med biology major and then went to the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine in 1994. Finished 2 years of medical school, then took a leave of absence because the last 2 years of medical school are your clinical rotations. After I took the leave, I went to Rome to a house of spiritual discernment, figure out if I wanted to be a doctor or priest or both. Decided I wanted to be a priest, so I left medical school in 1997 to start the seminary, and then I was ordained as a priest in 2002. Part of the reason I went into medicine was because of the example of my father, who was a doctor. He was a doctor in India, came to the United States in January of 1970, and my parents and brothers were immigrants, and they encountered a lot of prejudice, and my mother was very concerned about us. She's like, boys, no one in this country is going to give you anything. You're going to have to work hard. You're going to have to study hard and pray hard. And we did. But my mother had been a school teacher in India, so she drilled academics into us. But pray hard, she'd send us off to school. We'd say our morning prayer. She'd say, pray that you be a good boy, a tall boy, and a doctor. So we were kind of, in a way, groomed to go into medicine. And medicine was a noble profession. We saw my dad constantly saving life after life after life. And it was a good income. People respected doctors. Who wouldn't want that? But in the end, the Lord called me to be a physician of souls, we might say.
Well, I think that's well needed, right?
That was one thing. We had five boys in our family, and I thought about how the church was so good to our family when they first came to the United States. You know, the Catholic priest, even though we were a poor family, let us come to the Catholic school. In part because of the prejudice my oldest brother had encountered. And so I thought, how can we, and the nuns ran, the Sisters of Mercy ran St. Charles Hospital, where my dad worked. And when he first came over, there was an apartment where they let him stay and everything. And so I thought about what the priests and nuns did for our family. I thought, somebody's got to give back to the church. And I had a sense of the call, even from my childhood. Actually, when I was in eighth grade, my eighth grade classmates and I, we had to predict what we'd be in 50 years. And my classmates predicted I'd be the first American pope. So, I like praying. We prayed all the time. We prayed the rosary every day as a family. I was an altar boy growing up. I had no aversion to church. I always had a profound faith. And I saw the great faith of my parents. And they believed, you know, they practiced what they believed and what they taught us. So there was a kind of consistency and integrity there that sustained not only them, but our whole family. And that was attractive.
So Pope Francis described you of being strong faith and good character. What was your impression of the Pope?
You know, so I had met the Pope briefly in 2016. He named 800 priests from around the world, missionaries of mercy. And then I just met him in Rome. They have a course of formation for new bishops. So I just met him. You know, the Pope is one who speaks with symbolic gestures. If you think about where he went to Lampedusa, which was where the migrants were all coming in. He's gone to places that have small, small Catholic populations to highlight the plight of the people there. To me, we often say actions speak louder than words. And I think the Pope is like that. He's tried to emphasize strongly mercy and being a church of the poor, you know, church of the poor and a church for the poor. He's tried to emphasize trying to not be such dour Christians, but to go and proclaim the joy of the gospel to others, to go out of our comfort zone to the spiritual and existential peripheries. And I think that that is an important dimension of Pope Francis. So, you know, he was elected March 13th of 2013. By November 24th of 2013, he published The Joy of the Gospel. And right there is the whole program for his pontificate. So very often people will say, well, what are my priorities? And the first thing I say is to evangelize, bring the good news of salvation to those who need to hear it, especially those who are at the margins, who are sort of forgotten about by society.
Yeah, I think you have a unique perspective because you mentioned something about your brother running into some issues and, right. and, you know, really being able to connect with the Pope and what his mission is.
And the Pope, you know, the Pope also talks a lot about immigration and migration. And some people think of it only as a problem. My parents came to this country wanting a better life for their family. And that's what a lot of people who are coming to this country, documented or undocumented, they want a better life. Mm-hmm. And this country, with the freedoms we have, offers opportunity. And so I think the Pope also wants to emphasize, look, these aren't just numbers. These are real people with real issues. And the conditions in their home countries are so awful that they're being forced to flee. And that should raise our awareness outside of our little bubble where we live in relative comfort to what other people are going through. And so he's raising for us the issue of being in solidarity, especially with those who suffer.
How do you see like the biggest challenges for the diocese today?
I mean, so evangelization is one priority. A second priority, I said, is vocations. I think the two go hand in hand. So we have to proclaim the good news of salvation. Sometimes people think of the church as just a bureaucracy and sometimes only with a church of rules, right? But we have good news to share that God comes to save us in the person of Jesus of Nazareth, that he offers life and eternal life to those who will believe in him, that there is mercy and forgiveness of sins, that no matter whatever you did that's bad or wrong, you can turn it around with God's grace and cooperating with God's grace, so that there's hope for all of us. And I think that's an attractive message. So often we get bogged down in the little details rather than seeing the bigger picture. So part of evangelization involves proclamation. But part of proclamation means you need to have people willing to proclaim. Jesus calls his disciples first to himself, to be with him. So they pray with him and they develop their friendship with him. And some he calls to be apostles and he chooses them, right? And so the bishops are the successors of the apostles. We need priests in this diocese. You know, we have like 105 parishes. We have 95 priests. We've got 10 pastors who are beyond retirement age. This year, there were no ordinations to the priesthood. Next year, there's only one, and he's from Uganda. And he's older. So we need to build a culture of vocations. Not just to the priesthood or to the religious life for men and women, but also to marriage. Like so many people are not getting married today, in part because they've grown up in broken families or their parents or grandparents experienced divorce. They don't want to go through it. Many people are living together before marriage or not getting married at all because they don't see any value in the institution of marriage. And yet, so we have to also help people to discern the call to be married, to give themselves over to another, to be willing to discern, is God calling me to be mother or father and to generate new life and to nurture that life? And so if we want to have a strong church, we need to have strong families. And every vocation, whether it's the married life, to the diaconate, to consecrated religious life, or to the priesthood, is born in the family. When I think about my own family, it was my parents who really taught us the faith, who prayed with us. And my four brothers are married. They all have children. All of us practice our faith. And so this secularization, this falling away from the faith, I think is a great challenge for us. I mean, besides the voice of the church, there are other voices. And there are many, many voices through social media to which people have access. So we have to proclaim this good news of salvation. And this isn't just the mission of the priests and the nuns and the religious brothers, right? Sometimes we think that the lay faithful are simply objects of evangelization. I think one challenge that I will have and the priests who work with me will have is to motivate lay people to realize I'm a protagonist in the future of this church. That is, I help, I'm one who has to go to my neighbor or people I work with and tell them about what Jesus offers or the good news of salvation or how my life is better because I have faith. I think it's not, we just simply don't have enough priests or religious to be doing that. Everybody has to do that. So for example, my father was a physician and certainly he prayed for his patients and all this sort of thing, but his bedside manner, his compassionate care helped bring Jesus to those people who were sick, who were suffering, who had lost hope. He saved so many lives just in that way. My mother was a school teacher in India and she brought God's love to her students. But when she came to the United States and when she had raised us, she went back to school and got a master's in education, ed specialist degree, and a master's in social work and counseling. And she would volunteer at a women's crisis center for battered women. And then she worked at the University of Toledo in the Office of Accessibility and in the Office of Minority Affairs, helping disabled students and helping minority students to achieve something, in part because she herself was an immigrant and she was the first woman in her family to go to college and finish college. And so she gave something back. And how many people, you know, even at the university, you know, loved my mother or experienced something of God's love because somebody cared. Sometimes we speak to others about faith explicitly, but sometimes it's the way we treat them. Monsignor Luigi Giussani, who's the founder of a lay movement called Communion and Liberation, he would say that the church is the presence of Christ in the human reality. But the church isn't just the Diocese of Columbus bureaucracy at 190 70s Gay Street, 190 80s Broad Street. It's not just the priests and the nuns. It's not just the structures. It's all the people as well.
What would you say to people that, you know, think of the Catholic Church, you know, in the traditional sense, and now it's much more collaborative. So how would you define it as today?
Well, I would say this, it's the church is the, and the Second Vatican Council speaks of the church as the people of God, not just the priests. And so that we're the whole people on a pilgrim journey. Pope Francis emphasizes synodality, a church that walks together, a church that listens. And he says to the bishop, sometimes the bishop has to be out in front and lead. Sometimes he has to be in the middle of his people, getting the smell of the sheep. And sometimes he has to be behind them, making sure no one gets left too far behind. But the point is we're on the road together. And this has been my experience 20 years as a priest, only 5 months as a bishop, but 20 years as a priest is like, I learned a lot from what lay people have to say, their expertise in the world. Or sometimes, you know, like I would get my hair cut and talk to the barber. And the barber would tell me exactly what was happening in the community because you cut everybody's hair and you're sitting there in the chair and you're talking about your life, your problem, and would tell me what I need to preach about, what's on people's minds and hearts. I would go for a walk in the neighborhood with another priest, and about 2.5 miles in to our 5 mile walk, there was a bar. It was called Salem Gardens in Cincinnati. And I stopped there. It was run by some parishioners and it was family friendly on one side. So the kids would be there having burgers and with their families and you'd visit with them and they saw the priest. And then you'd go on to the other side and it's a proper bar and people, you know, they'd had a few too many. Hey, Father, what about this? Hey, Father, what about, and take the time, you answer their questions as best you can. You win some, you lose some. But they're like, hey, the priest actually cared about me. He spent time with me. He listened to me. And it told me, again, what are people actually thinking about? Because I was a seminary professor, so I could live in a kind of a bubble. So and since I've been in Columbus, I've been only here 5 months, but I put 13,000 miles on my car, driving around, visiting parishes. I was at Christ the King School over in Columbus yesterday. I had mass for the school children, you know, and some of them are from West Africa. Some are African-Americans, lots of Latinos, some Anglos. The kids are all full of life. So you see the great diversity in the Church of Columbus. On the one hand, then one day I could be up in Ada and Kenton up near Ohio Northern. I'm still in the Diocese of Columbus. I could be at St. Luke's Church in Danville or St. Vincent de Paul in Mount Vernon in a more rural area. I could be down in Washington Courthouse or be in Chillicothe or Portsmouth, the center of the opioid epidemic. And so I, as Bishop of Columbus, I think of all the problems, not just of the city. I mean, the city is there and we've got our development coming with Intel and everything. And you've got the university and you've got the downtown, you've got the Capitol building, you've got the governor and all of that. But the 21 counties outside of Franklin and Delaware that are part of the Diocese of Columbus, and those people also need a shepherd. And I have to listen to their concerns too. If you're in a poor rural area and people are moving away from the countryside, or you've got problems with drugs or extreme poverty or no jobs, that's a reality for a lot of people. And so being with people, for some people that's life, that's energy sucking. For me, it's a very life-giving. Going into people's homes and just having meals with them. It's great for me. People say, oh, Bishop, I would have called you, but I knew how busy you are. But I certainly, if I'm that busy, I can't meet with people, then, you know, what type of priest, what type of bishop am I?
And I think that's what makes you so relatable to some of the younger Catholics, right? Because it's just a different perspective.
Oh yeah. You know, the other day I was at Plank. So sometimes on Plank Pizza, Planks on Parson, you know, they have pizza half price on Monday nights, right? So I just went in there. Some Mondays I don't, you know, I just work and work, and I realize, oh, it's 8:30. I need to get something to eat, but everything downtown seemingly is closed by 9 o'clock anymore. So, but Planks is open. So I go down to Planks. Well, there's a guy, you know, I'm sitting there at the bar eating my pizza. You know, I got my Miller Lite. I'm eating my pizza. The guy, hey, pastor. And I said, oh, sorry, I say father. I said, well, actually, I'm the Bishop of Columbus. He said, oh, you're Bishop Fernandez. I'm like, yeah, Bishop Fernandez, yeah. And he's like, well, I went to Catholic school and I helped the Dominican Sisters of Peace out and I volunteered with the poor. But Bishop, I have to admit, I don't have a lot of faith. I do good things for others, but I'm not sure I believe. I don't go to church anymore. And so, well, why not? And he began to talk about how 15 years ago, his brother got cancer and died. And he's never quite got over that. Right. So I talked to him for a long time about suffering, the value of suffering, about how he's not alone, how he should continue to do good things, but that there is a place for him in the church and that I would pray for him. His name was, I think, was Matthew. His brother's name was Mark. And then he's like, well, I got to go. I better let you eat your pizza. But then his lips started to quiver and he got a tear in his eye. And so I just gave him a hug right there in Planks and gave him a blessing. And he went on his way. And I promised him I'd pray a decade of the rosary for him and his brother. And so, and that was that. So you meet people of all walks of life and you just have to keep reaching out to them. And there's stories like that. And then there's, you know, like in my first couple of weeks in the Diocese of Columbus as bishop, I did 3 confirmations in English, 3 in Spanish. And I also did a Eucharistic procession for the Latino community over at St. James the Less. And how many of these people are like, oh, Bishop, you know, Hispanics, Bishop, we're so happy to meet you. And they kiss the ring. Can we get a picture? And they're just happy that you're there with them and you're smiling. Same thing with like, went to 2 African-American parishes, one for their Juneteenth celebration, St. Dominic. Another one was a Holy Rosary, St. John. And they're poor people in poor parishes, but boy, do they have faith and they sing and they rejoice, and very different from kind of aging parishes that are just kind of, in some ways, going through the motion where you're presiding over a slow death. You see how the people have real faith, how they can rejoice in the Lord, even amid great poverty. And that, you know, that makes me want to be better for them.
So when it's all said and done, what kind of legacy would you like to leave? I mean, you're doing such great work, but what do you envision that to be?
You know, so when I talk to parents, what they're either happy about or what they're heartbroken about is whether their children have faith. Because for them and for grandparents, that's what's most important. For my parents, they longed for heaven. They wanted their children and their children's children to have faith. For me, that would be the thing, is if there are more people alive with faith, practicing their faith, tending to the poor, educating those who need to be educated, caring for the sick and the lonely, and proclaiming Jesus Christ. By the time I'm finished, 25 years from now as Bishop of Columbus, than when I started, that would be a great legacy if people have faith. And I think if people have faith, it's contagious, because people who rejoice in the Lord, people around them whose lives are falling apart, say, what does that person have that I don't have, that I'm missing in my life? We're so well connected with technology, and yet so many people are so lonely. And all they're looking for is a faithful friend. Well, I have a faithful friend, and his name is Jesus, and he's there, and he's available for everyone who will accept his offer of friendship.
Oh, I totally agree. So my last question is, what would you like to accomplish most as the bishop?
Again, a similar sort of thing. I would want people to have faith, but I would say this. I would want people to accept responsibility for their faith. That is, I said, vocations are our priority. St. John Paul II has said, a vocation is a gift whose purpose is to build up the church and increase the kingdom of God in the world. And we're all called by God. Vocation is also a calling to be holy, right where God has placed us. So I want more priests, more than anything, to be able to bring the sacraments to others and guide others to help them find their vocation. I want more religious to witness that God is to be loved above all else and to witness to the value of poverty, chastity, and obedience. I want permanent deacons who are willing to be true servants of the word, but also of their neighbor, right, and of the altar. I want men and women to be married and to witness to Christ's love for his church. I want lay people to say, I may not have discovered my vocation yet. I'm a single person, but boy, I have a vocation as a disciple, and I will follow. So each person doing his or her part, we have to do something, right? My parents would always tell us share, and we share all the, you know, we share our food, we share our toys, we share all our yard, but we also had to share the work, right? We had chores we all had to do to keep the whole thing going. Well, that's what I want people to realize, I have a responsibility toward my brother, sister, toward this church that has given me new life. In the Gospel of Life, Pope John Paul II uses the story of Cain and Abel, and Cain has killed his brother Abel. And God says, where is your brother? And Cain says, how should I know? Am I my brother's keeper? And the answer for every Catholic has to be, yes, I am my brother's keeper. I am my sister's keeper. So if I can help the people, the Catholics of Columbus, to realize that we have to care for one another, well, then I will have accomplished something as Bishop of Columbus in proclaiming this gospel of life to the people in our community.
I think that's wonderful. I really appreciate all your time. I know you're super busy, and I just really thought it'd be great for people to get to know you and hear your philosophy and the direction for the diocese.
Yeah, you know, so in Italian, they say, avanti, avanti, sempre avanti. And in Spanish, they say, adelante, adelante, siempre adelante. You know, always, always keep moving forward. So sometimes we take a step back, sometimes, but we keep moving forward till eventually we reach our goal, which is heaven. And so that's what I want to keep the people in Columbus. I want to keep moving forward, and that's what we'll keep doing, trying to stay as positive as we can, because we have good news to share.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Anytime. You know, okay. People say, oh, you don't, you're so busy, you don't have time, but I'll make time.
That sounds awesome. I'm going to take you up on that.
All right, great. Get in touch with Jason and we'll do it.
All right.
All right. God bless you. Take care. Have a great day.
See you. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
If you haven't already subscribed to the channel, please hit subscribe so you can get notified when new content comes out. Please share this with anyone who could be inspired by it, and feel free to post any questions so we can be inspired by new content. Thanks for listening. If you're interested in learning more, visit our website at bakercreative.co.